88% of the workweek is spent communicating, so it's important your team does it well. Enter Grammarly. Grammarly's AI helps teams communicate clearly the first time. It shows you how to make words resonate with your audience, helps with brainstorming, and lets you instantly create and revise drafts in just one click. Join over 70,000 teams and 30 million people who use Grammarly to move work forward. Go to grammarly.com/enterprise to learn more. Grammarly. Enterprise ready AI.
How do you feel when you switch to Geico and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, Happy Friday! Then you check your phone quickly and discover today's actually Friday. So yes, Happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with Geico feels just like that. Get more with Geico.
Dress, the History of Fashion, is a production of Dress Media. With over 8 billion people in the world, we all have one thing in common. Every day, we all get dressed.
Welcome to Dress, the History of Fashion, a podcast that explores the who, what, when of why we wear. We are fashion historians and your hosts, Cassidy Zachary
and April Callahan. Dress listeners, it's been a few months since we have brought you a Fashion History Now episode because we've been up to a lot, right, Cass?
Yeah, we've been pretty busy. And what's funny is we really do try to bring these Fashion History Now episodes once a month. And for whatever reason, they always get pushed back. And we always end up with a huge list of stuff that we want to share with you. So we've kind of narrowed it down a lot this week to bring you some the latest in Fashion History Now news. But yeah, we've been busy. We were in Paris, or I was in Paris in April. Actually, I got back from Paris like a month ago. April, you just got back from Paris like two days ago.
Yeah, a couple of days ago, actually. And yeah, absolutely. This Fashion History Now, we had so many topics on the slate that we actually had to take things out. So we're very excited to share some of these things with you all.
Yeah, absolutely. But before we do that, we do just want to say that we are actually heading towards the end of season 7. April, can you believe it? So many milestones this season. 500 episodes. We hit over 200 million downloads. So a lot has happened. And we are heading into our winter hiatus because we need a break. We do this twice a week. This is a lot of work. And we also have so much exciting new content on top of the podcast coming your way. Do you want to share a couple things we have up our fashionable sleeves?
Yes, we are about to teach a new class. So if any of you are creating your holiday wish list for things that you perhaps would like to ask from your friends and family for the holidays, we're going to be co-teaching a new class. And it's actually going to be on the golden age of haute couture in the 1950s. Cass is going to do a bigger, broader overview of that time period. And I'm going to do the designer deep dives. And it's going to be very cute. It's going to be amazingly packed with beautiful images. So put that on your wish list if you're interested.
Yeah, absolutely. So if you've ever wondered, for instance, even what is the haute couture and how does the haute couture operate during this really golden age? Because what happens in the 1960s is the haute couture starts to decline. So let's head into the 1950s. We hope you will come with us on that journey. It's going to be really fun. And we hope to announce that class in the next week or two.
Mm-hmm.
And
absolutely.
Then we also hope to be announcing soon, at least by the end of the year, our 2025 trip to Paris.
Yes, which right now is slated for May 2025. We may or may not have had a whole meeting about this yesterday.
Yes, so book your entire month. No, I'm just kidding. But keep it in mind. It's going to be early summer or very late spring, and we are in the
planning phases.
So stay tuned. And then also just something to mention, if you are listening to our podcast in the future, you can always head to the end of our episodes. We talk about a lot of things, but we also give you a hashtag that directs you to the visual imagery. So if, say you're listening to this episode 10 years from now and you want to find the reel that we created to associate with it, head to hashtag dressed and then we'll give you the hashtag. And today's hashtag, just so you know, is hashtag dressed 523. Okay. That's a little in notes that we brought up to the
business.
Front. Yes.
A little business.
Before we dive into the fun Fashion History Now news that we have for you.
And I just want to recognize that the recent weeks
as well as the whole past year, honestly, have been exceptionally challenging for millions of us, if not billions of us around the world. And I'm just feeling right now myself, and this is something that like Cass and I talked about between the two of us as business partners, like we can all use this extra dose of love right now. So what we're going to do is we're going to start off our Fashion History Now episode with a little bit of a heartwarming tidbit that reminds us that community, kindness, and fashion have the power to connect us all. So Cass, have you seen this little bit that's been circulating on the internet about the wedding dresses and the library?
That has popped up in my feed, but I have not done a deep dive into it. So I'm excited to learn more.
Yeah. So it goes without saying that aside from fashion, we would not have made Dress for 7 years and more than 500 episodes if we weren't completely passionate about fashion. But also, one of the things that we love the most about making the show is all of the research that goes into making it. And without libraries, oftentimes that research would not be possible. So one of our other great loves besides fashion is libraries. And this brings us to one of the most charming news stories I have read all year. There is actually a library where you can check out wedding gowns. And this was such a fun story and such a fun kind of like rabbit hole to dive into. And it is the labor of love, or maybe even the labor for love, of a librarian. Her name is Adele Puccio. She is the director of the Maurice M. Pine Free Library in Fairlawn, New Jersey. And her work has garnered a little bit of press attention this past year because she has turned her hobby of collecting wedding gowns into public programming.
Amazing.
So basically, any potential bride can make an appointment to come to the library and she can view their more than 100 wedding gowns that they have as part of their library offerings and check them out, which is, I don't know, I think I cried the first time I read this story because there is no due date either. They can check them out and return them, or if they become sentimentally attached to them, they can return them whenever you wish or keep it forever. Aww. As Adele says. And these wedding gowns that Adele has collected, some of them date all the way back to the 1920s. And even Adele's own wedding gown from 1985 is part of this collection. And she has been doing this for 20 years, collecting the gowns.
That's amazing. And also so needed, because what do you do with your wedding dress? I know I have my wedding dress. It's been 10 years now. It's sitting in a box. My dear friends made it for me, so I probably will never get rid of it. But what do you do with it? Some people want to, you donate it to Savers or the thrift store locally. You can give it away. Some people sell it. But I think this is such a creative and special way to keep these dresses in circulation and also reach out to people who may or may not have the means to buy a wedding dress, right? And so, yeah, this is so cool on so many levels.
Fun fact, my wedding dress lives in a drag closet in Fire Island. And it gets worn from time to time. I get photos of it. And Adele says, I love making people happy. I love the idea that it's recycling. And her fascination and her passion for wedding gowns actually started when she was a teenager. Apparently, she grew up a few blocks from the original location of Kleinfeld Bridal in Brooklyn. So she would always walk past it all the time. And then she became obsessed with wedding gowns. And she also read Brides Magazine as a teenager. So it's super fun. And some of these gowns that are in the library's collection have second, third, and maybe even fourth lives. People can alter them however they please to make it fit. And more or less, she has continued to build the collection from her own collection by way of donations. And some of the online articles have all these photos, which are really charming because her office is like racks and racks of wedding gowns in her office in the library. And it's great. People have traveled from all over the US and also from as far away as Austria to check out some of these wedding gowns.
Amazing. Yeah. And that reminds me of a story. I don't think we ever mention it on A Fashion History Now. And now I can't remember which country it is. But there is a library that also checks out clothes, or they did like an experimental program where you could go to the library and check out clothes. So same concept, making clothing free, accessible, and keeping clothing in circulation and out of landfills, which everyone should know at this point, we love. More of this, please. There could be... Yeah. Obviously, there could be a wedding dress library in every city, every state. I mean, around the world, really.
I think I cried the first time I read this article. It's so good.
Yes, quite spectacular. And speaking of spectacular, our next bit of news comes to us by way of one of our recent travelers on our dress tour of Paris, Julie. Julie, hey, this Julie. One's for you. You alerted us about one of the most special auctions we have ever heard of. And many of you may have seen this because it has been making the rounds on the internet and on the socials. But just a few days ago, a necklace that is suspected to be part of a scandal swirling about the one and only Queen Marie Antoinette of France went up for auction. So for any of you who have seen the wonderful 2001 film, The Affair of the Necklace, a portion of that very necklace may be the piece that sold at Sotheby's in Geneva last week for
$4.8 million.
And there's many interesting things about this necklace, which I'm going to dig into. But for one, it's comprised of 300 carats of 500 Golconda diamonds. April, had you ever heard of Golconda diamonds?
No, I had not.
So apparently this is considered, I'm not a fine jewelry expert by any means, so I dug into this a little bit more. And apparently Golconda diamonds are considered the world's finest gems, found in some of the oldest diamond mines in the world. And these mines are in eastern India. And it must be said, these mines were completely depleted by early 19th century. Thank you, colonialism. But for more than 1,000 years, India was the world's leader in diamond production.
Oh, I did not know that.
No idea. I did not know that either. And so this necklace that went to auction, it's a choker style necklace. It has two pronounced diamond tassels at the front, which distinctly resemble renderings of an elaborate necklace that was known to have been commissioned by King Louis XV from the jewelers Bohmer and Bessenge in 1772. And so he commissioned these jewelers to create this extravagant necklace. It was one of the most extravagant necklaces that the French court had ever seen. And it was not for his queen, but for his mistress, one Madame de Berry.
Of course. Of course I was.
And so King Louis XV dies of smallpox, and the necklace at this point had not been paid for. And the jewelers, of course, had outlaid what would have been something like $17 million in its creation.
They had to source all the stones and get it all together.
Knowing that the king was going to pay them, of course, right? So after he passed, they really needed to sell it. And it goes without saying that the market for something like this was exceedingly small. So they tried to sell it to Marie Antoinette, apparently, a couple times, right? Mm-hmm. So Marie Antoinette obviously marries Louis XV's grandson, who is now the king. Following his death, she said no, she did not want it. And there's speculation that maybe this was because it was intended for her arch rival at court, Madame de Berry. Yeah.
And also there's some speculation that she was just like, no, that's too extravagant. Like, we can't spend that much money on a necklace for me. We need to spend it on the people. So she does get a bad rap sometimes, but that's a different story for a different day.
Yeah. I mean, I was going to say, and I'll continue on that thread in a second, because as you said, she also could have rejected it because she thought it was too expensive. It clearly was. This is a tumultuous time for the French royal family and France in general, right? This is the eve of the French Revolution. It's going to happen in a couple of years. Mm. But what we do know is that in 1784, a rather elaborate scheme to steal the necklace was hatched. And this involved a cardinal, his down-on-her-luck Comtesse lover, and a prostitute who was hired for her resemblance to Marie Antoinette.
I mean, there's a reason why this was made into a movie, because this is a real-life scenario that it's hard to make up, just saying.
but yeah. It happens.
Yeah. So I'm going to try to distill it down, but it's convoluted. But basically, the contest tricked the cardinal into thinking that Marie Antoinette wished him to retrieve the necklace in secret from the jeweler as she was purchasing it and didn't want anybody to know, and that he needed to then meet her in the dark garden at night to deliver it. Hence the prostitute dressed as Marie Antoinette. So all was revealed later that Marie Antoinette knew nothing about this at all and that the whole thing was a con job, and they were caught. The contest was brought to justice. But as you referenced, April, Marie Antoinette's reputation never recovered from this scandal. It was really used to further slander her reputation as the so-called Madame Deficit. And as we've discussed on the show many times, I think her lavish spending was blamed for the country's economic crisis. She essentially became a scapegoat in many ways.
And what I always think is really interesting is that if you actually go into the historical record, she was not the one overspending her budget. She was overspending her budget, but she was not the one that was most overspending her budget.
Yeah.
It was actually King Louis XV's sisters, the two spinster sisters, that were spending far more money than Marie Antoinette ever did. Just saying.
We talk about that in our interview. That's actually the first interview I did on dress from season one with Kimberly Chrisman Campbell. We did an episode on Marie Antoinette's dressmaker, fashion designer, Rose Bertin. And she talks about how she just, you know, even the spending that she did do, it was lavish, but was expected of her as queen. It was so controversial when they put up the Elizabeth Vigée Lebrun portrait of her in her chemise gown because she didn't look like a queen. So she really couldn't win.
She was damned if she did. She was damned if she didn't.
But we digress.
Yeah. We also have to remember she was 18 when she became queen.
She gets a bad rep, right? She really does. Okay. The necklace disappears after all this comes to light. And the jewelers were supposedly never paid. So it was broken up, or it's thought that it was broken up, and that this necklace sold at Sotheby's is but one portion of the original necklace, which featured four similar tassels in its known rendering. And there is a rendering of the original necklace. And this portion that sold at Sotheby's has a solid provenance that dates back at least to the early 20th century. So it was handed down among members of the aristocratic Paget family of Britain, and Marjorie Paget wore this piece that was sold recently in 1937 to King George VI's coronation, and then a subsequent member of the family wore it to the coronation of Queen Elizabeth II in 1953, and then it goes into the hands of a private collector, and it's been in those hands since the 1960s, and its recent emergence on the market created waves of excitement around the globe. It was then exhibited in London, Hong Kong, Dubai, Singapore, and Taipei before landing in Geneva for this sale. And what a dream come true for its new owner to be the caretaker of this historic object, whether or not it is actually part of the 1772 creation. It's pure fantasy come to life. And I also just want to say, I think we've mentioned this, but there is a Marie Antoinette exhibition at the V&A 2025.
Yes. Yes, there is. And we can't wait.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. I also, too, some of the news articles I read after the sale was actually completed, that the owner of this necklace now is anonymous, but it's a she. And she said, she's basically indicated that she is like extremely happy, and she knows that she's privileged to take care of this historical object. So it's nice to know that it went into hands that appreciate its historical importance, perhaps.
Because there's not many known surviving examples of things that belong to Marie Antoinette. So when they hit the market, they are incredibly valuable and rare. And maybe, who knows, maybe she'll loan it to the museum exhibition.
Well, and technically speaking, she never actually owned this piece, right? It was just associated with her, right?
Yes, yes.
Okay, we're going to take a short sponsor break here, but more about fantastic fashion when we come back.
Dress listeners, holiday shopping season is upon us, and Rakuten is the best way to save lots of money this holiday season. Why? That's because you can stack holiday sales and deals on top of Rakuten's cashback program to maximize your savings at 3,500 stores.
How does it work? Well, your favorite stores pay Rakuten to send them shoppers, and Rakuten passes some of that money directly onto their members via cashback by PayPal or a check.
And this holiday season, cashback rates will be the highest of the year, up to 15% depending on the store. And we are talking across every single category, including fashion, beauty, electronics, home essentials, travel, and dining.
As a pet owner, I especially love the fact that I can get cash back at PetSmart and Chewy when I shop them via Rakuten. Membership is free and it's easy to sign up. Join the 17 million members who are already saving. Start all of your holiday shopping at Rakuten.com or download the Rakuten app to start saving today. Your cash back really adds up. Us ladies have all been there. Feeling a smidge off the days before your cycle is something that we have all experienced at one point or another. For some of us, it's occasional. For others, it's a monthly battle.
Which is why Happy Mammoth has created Estro Control, a capsule containing science-backed herbal extracts that help support hormonal health, especially in women who suffer from PMS.
The way Estro Control eases PMS is quite interesting. The ingredients help support the liver, and that's where our hormones get processed, especially estrogen. So when the estrogen isn't processed well in the liver, this can potentially trigger PMS.
Estro Control is made specifically for women who are premenopausal, so it's perfect for women that haven't entered menopause yet. In fact, it's amazing for perimenopause, when hormones start to fluctuate and PMS can hit hard.
For a limited time, you can get 15% off on your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code DRESSED at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code DRESSED for 15% off today.
Movement has the biggest deals of the holiday season and the sleekest watches around. Whether you're gifting for family, friends, or yourself, shop 30 to 60% off Movement's variety of designs, colorways, and functionalities. From the thinnest automatic dress watch under $500 to waterproof guarantee adventure-ready sport watches to rare ceramics. Be the good gifter this year. Shop 30 to 60% off now at movement.com and enjoy fast and free shipping. That's MVMT.com.
Welcome back. Okay, so we were just speaking about this amazing, fantastic necklace that may or may not have been related to Marie Antoinette in some way, but I'd like to switch this up a little bit and talk about menswear vis-a-vis a little bit of some 14th century menswear fantasy.
Whoa, can't wait.
That is the Middle Ages, friends. And a few months ago, I bookmarked this post that the Sussex Medieval Society posted because it was the most amusing detail from this 14th century illuminated manuscript that depicted a detail of the Battle of Crecy, which I did not know about. Apparently, this took place in 1346, and it was part of this Hundred Years' War between the French and the English. And in this particular battle, the English won. It was a skirmish in what is now northern France. But military history is not what I want to talk about today. I want to talk about who wore what to war.
Okay.
So this post was particularly cheeky, and I use that term intentionally, because it detailed a section of this battle depicted in this illuminated manuscript by Jean Froissart. And this manuscript is held by the BNF in Paris, the Bibliothèque Nationale de France. And the detail, the little kind of like section that they put in their post, is depicting a soldier wearing what we would now best describe as chainmail booty shorts. Yeah. And the artist's depiction of these chainmail booty shorts, it's on a very perky rump. They're ripe, they're melons, they're right there in your face. And this is medieval dress at its wildest. So let me describe what he's wearing from head to toe, because it's not just the chainmail booty shorts. It's the combination of all of it. He is basically wearing a hat and a silhouette, which we would now describe as a bowler hat. But that hat is also covered in chainmail. He's also wearing a very bright green, very short doublet that's somewhere between a doublet and a houppelande. If you're nerdy fashion historians, you guys know what I mean by that. It has like these undulation like ripples across the front. It has a very fitted waist, and the hem of this doublet comes to his high hips. So the sleeves of the doublet are slashed in the back, and at the lower arm, those slashes reveal a gray and black interior of the garment, right? So it's bright green, but on the inside, it's gray and black.
The whole thing is also trimmed at its edges in yellow piping at the sleeves and the hem. Like, it's the doublet itself is crazy. And over all of this, and let's remember, he's in a battle right now, right? He's wearing this bright blue scarf that's like swathed across his shoulders. And that scarf is also supporting a crossbow. Okay. So that's just what's going on the top of the body. On his lower body, he is wearing flesh-colored knit hose, right? Pants were not being worn at this time. So he has one hose on one leg, one hose on another leg. And over those hose, he's wearing chainmail booty shorts.
And I have to tell you, while you were describing this, I Googled it. What's hilarious is, of course, things that came up are contemporary chainmail booty shorts.
And we're also not done here yet, because with all of this, he's wearing these tight black shoes with really long pointy toes. They're not exactly Poulain, but the point is very artificial, and in its fashion, it's not function, right? Especially for war. So, wow. I mean, just have to say,
these manuscripts are the gift that keep on giving. If you love it, there's so much in these images. There's often, they have a lot going on in them. And so if you zoom in, and now with technology, we can zoom in a lot easier. So they're really fun. And also, one of the things that popped up, somebody posted this image on social media and said, who the F gave the Genoese crossbowmen the chainmail booty shorts?
Yeah. So in theory, these booty shorts are meant to protect his groin and his buttocks, which would have been exposed due to the length of his very short doublet. But apparently that does not keep him from being shot.
Yes, exactly.
Because in this image, he has been shot with arrows in the back of his leg and also his butt.
Yeah.
So we presume that his buttocks wounds were lessened by the chainmail booty shorts. But the whole thing is just rather spectacular. And I just want to say that this underscores the point that we've talked about on the show many times before in the past, that oftentimes the wear was more extravagant and more fashionable than women's wear, or even crazier than women's fashions, if not more so. So
yeah, gender, just like gendered clothing, is a construct, but we digress.
Chainmail booty shorts. I want some. I think everyone should have a pair.
Okay, I have one more thing to talk about today. And April, you just got back from Paris.
I did.
I'm wondering if you got to see our next bit of Fashion History Now news in person. Did you by chance make your way to Disneyland Paris during the last couple of months?
I did not. Unfortunately, I still have yet to make my way there. My ex-husband is an architect for them, so maybe that has part of my avoidance of Disneyland Paris.
If you had, you might have had the chance to view the French fashion brand Capernaum's new foray into printing their well-known swipe handbags. So, do you know what the swipe handbag looks like?
Imagine like it's an oval, but in the center, there's like a hole that makes the handle.
Yeah. Google it. They're very famous for these handbags. They're typically made from leather and hover in the $800 price range. But we are wondering if their new novel approach to creating these bags using something known as RLP or rapid liquid printing might just lower that price tag a bit. And we would categorize this as 3D printing, but it is unlike any other process, at least I have ever seen before. It's pretty incredible. This technology was developed by the Self-Assembly Lab at MIT. And according to 3DPrintingIndustry.com, is, quote, unlike traditional 3D printing methods that build object layers by layer, RLP allows designers to draw objects within a gel suspension. We'll post a link in our show notes so you can see the video.
It's so cool. I've watched it like 10 times.
I feel like I've seen this process happen in like sci-fi. I mean, sci-fi often predicts the future. So I think creating something within gel is like something somebody made up in sci-fi. So to be able to see it and it happening now is pretty incredible.
Yeah.
So going off of this quote, it says this process removes the constraints of gravity, enabling the creation of soft, stretchable, and durable items. So the co-founder of Caperni is a man by the name of Arnold Vaillant. He goes on to explain, quote, made from platinum cured recyclable silicone, the bag reflects Caperni's commitment to sustainable design. The RLP process is environmentally friendly, utilizing non-toxic materials with minimum impact. It's like bringing something to life in a tank with no limits to scale other than the size of the container. This process, as I think I mentioned earlier, was demonstrated live at Disneyland Paris in what has been said to be the first ever fashion show, apparently, at the theme park. So apparently, Caperni approached Disney a few years ago in hopes of partnering with them due to Disney's longstanding reputation for innovation and creativity. So the applications of this technology span far outside the world of fashion. Self-Assembly Lab notes that 3D printing hasn't really crossed over into mainstream mass manufacturing because many reasons. One, it's too slow, and it's also limited in terms of its scale by the size of the printer. My brother-in-law loves to 3D print. But yeah, I don't think I've ever purchased anything that's 3D printed. But the difference between 3D printing and RLP is that RLP uses this vat of gel that is, quote, incredibly fast, producing structures in a matter of minutes, designed for large-scale products that you can print an entire piece of furniture, and uses real-world industrial-grade materials. And then I also just want to say, April, this is not their first foray into 3D printing, because Caperni made a viral sensation a couple years ago in 2022, Paris Fashion Week. Do you remember when they literally sprayed that fabric dress or that liquid fabric dress onto Bella
Hadid? It was on Bella?
Yes, on the runway. And so they developed this liquid fabric, which is called Fabricon. They sprayed it on her on the runway. It instantly solidified into a wearable dress. So this is the type of technology they're developing. And an article from Wired told me that the dress generated more than $22 million in earned value, but many overlooked the deeper message behind its creation. Beyond its visible spectacle, the spray-on dress was a sustainable innovation. It's machine washable, re-liquefiable, and reusable. So the sustainable aspect of this technology is something that Caperni is really taking seriously. And so we're really excited to see this kind of industrial grade material being developed, but also being developed thoughtfully and with our planet in mind.
Yes. And you guys, it's so cool. So basically, it's a tank of gel. And whatever the object being made, there is like a digital needle drawing it out in the gel, and the gel solidifies. And then all of a sudden, voila, you have an object.
Yeah.
It's like that scene in The Fifth Element when she makes the chicken.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm talking about. It's so interesting.
It's like from nothing to something in an instant.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. What else do you have for us today?
Okay. Speaking of sustainability, I would like to make an Instagram follow recommendation.
Love those.
And as our longtime listeners know, I used to be an art gallerist. That's my background. And so I want to talk about some art / fashion. That is to follow Allison King. She is an Alberta, Canada-based artist. She originally studied graphic design and photography before she transitioned into a textile program at Ontario College of Art and Design. And I love her work for its ingenious use of repurposing textiles. Okay, some of you are out there saying, okay, a lot of fiber artists do this, but her work is very distinctive. It's very unique. She says, quote, my artistic style developed when I found a way to creatively combine my photographic imagery and with my textile work. My work combines textiles and elements of my original photographic images. Each piece is creating using fabrics, which I cut, manipulate, and stitch using a free motion technique. This allows me full creative control over how the thread is used to recreate my subject. So I don't even know where to start. You all are just going to have to go and check out her work. But if I have to like summarize it, her subject matter is frequently nature. She loves to do animals and to depict the urban outdoors. But really, it's about how she combines the photography and the textiles. And sometimes she even creates these really amazing textures using the individual threads from the fabric. It's mind-boggling. She builds up the look of moss or the fur in animals in 3D by like manipulating the individual threads in the textiles. And it's almost a sort of trompe l'oeil realism. You just have to see it to understand it. And you can check out her work at Allison King Art. And of course, we will put a link in our show notes to her Instagram feed.
Yes, I will definitely be checking her out. I had not heard of her before, but we love textile artists and textile art, obviously.
And sustainability.
Yes. I think that actually does it for us, dress listeners. We actually could have probably talked to you for another hour or two.
Yep.
And maybe we will in the future, because we are talking about creating a Patreon. Maybe more of our Fashion History Nows will live there, because we really do always run out of time. We love fashion history, but we always love to talk to you about fashion history in today's world. Yes, now.
Yeah.
And the way, and fashion history makers for the future. So on that note, we love you, dress listeners. And that does it for us this week. And may you consider where love resides in your closet next time you get dressed. Remember, we love hearing from you, so please feel free to reach out to us at hello@dressedhistory.com. Dressedhistory.com is also our website where you can find more information about our upcoming class, our upcoming tour, right? We just talked about our next Dress the School of Fashion course, which we're going to co-teach on the 1950s Golden Age of Couture. And then we'll very shortly also be announcing our Dress Fashion History Paris tour. So watch that space, or email us if you want to get on that list. Many of you have already emailed us to be the first to know, because that tour will sell out.
Yeah, jump in, friends. It's coming soon. Also, my fashion history tours, the Met, are back. They were on pause for a little bit while I was in Paris, and lots of you wrote to us asking, hey, why are there no dates on the schedule? And that's because I was not in New York City, but I'm back now. So head over to dressedhistory.com and you can sign up for either Tuesday mornings at 11 a.m. with me at the Met, or Friday evening tours at 6:30. I also just want to say, I can do tours for groups outside of these hours. If you arrange that ahead of time with me, you can just connect with me in advance to set that up at hello@dressedhistory.com.
And of course, if you'd like visual content connected to each week's episodes, follow us on Instagram at @dressed_podcast. The content specifically connected to this week's episode can be found at #dress523. The holidays are just around the corner, listeners. Ask for our class, ask for April's tours, or check out more than 150 of our favorite fashion history titles on our dressed bookshelf at bookshop.org/shop/dressed. We'll also put a link to that in our show notes, along with other links about the things we talked about today.
Love dress, but want to skip the ads? Consider subscribing to the ad-free version of the show for just $3 a month. Link in our show notes as well. As always, thank you for your continued support. More dressed coming your way soon. Dress, the History of Fashion, is a production of Dress Media.
How do you feel when you switch to Geico and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, Happy Friday! Then you check your phone quickly and discover today's actually Friday. So yes, Happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with Geico feels just like that. Get more with Geico. How do you feel when you switch to Geico and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, Happy Friday! Then you check your phone quickly and discover today's actually Friday. So yes, Happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with Geico feels just like that. Get more with Geico.